Hi, everyone. Welcome to today's teleseminar sponsored by Member Solutions. I'm Kathy Merler, the Director of Consulting for Member Solutions. Today's topic is on planning an in-house tournament for retention and profit. And that will be our first topic. First of all, if you're listening to this in our archive, on March 11th, which is today, you received an e-news from Member Solutions called the Weekly Solutions. Within that e-news, there were quite a few links on tournament information that you may want to go back and get. One is a how-to report on how to plan your tournament, which is a lot about what the seminar is about. Within that report, there was a download for a free customizable tournament flyer that you can get. So you want to maybe go back and grab that as well. And there's also a link for a free trial to Event Manager and a sample of an online registration form, whether you create one through Event Manager or you just need a sample to look at to create your own online tournament registration form. So all of those things are available to you to help you follow along with today's teleseminar and help you do your own planning. So with that in mind, what I'd like to do first is get right down to it and talk straight out about why and how you can throw an in-house tournament for retention and profit before we really get into the planning of that. First of all, when you look at retention, you know, you think about the reasons why some of your current students may be resistant to going to outside the school tournaments, you know, whether you endorse them or not, or whether you've invited them, or whether it's something that your students do on a regular basis. Some of the common reasons why people hesitate on competing in larger tournaments would be, number one, would be, you know, sometimes it's too expensive to travel, or the entry fees for the tournaments are just too high. So that sometimes can hold people back. And if they have a choice of paying for a tournament or paying your tuition, I hope we all agree they really should be paying their school tuition before they should be going to outside tournaments anyway. But that is one thing that holds people back sometimes, is it can be a little too expensive to travel to those tournaments, or sometimes the entry fees are a little bit more than they can afford in addition to the school tuition. Another reason that some people may not compete is, you know, the parents especially don't like the wait around time, you know, on a weekend. Sometimes it takes too long, it's too time consuming for parents to wait around and wait for their division to start. Now, some tournaments are really great about staying right on schedule, and I'm sure you've been to the ones that sometimes it can be 3, 4, even 5 hours sometimes before your division starts. So that can be one thing the parents are concerned with, whether it's waiting around too long or just not wanting to devote the majority of their weekend day waiting around to compete in a tournament or to have their kids compete. Another reason that sometimes people don't want to go to bigger tournaments, they might be shy about performing in front of strangers. They might have a fear of being laughed at or looked down upon. So, you know, and that could be pretty valid. So if you have someone who's got kind of delicate self-esteem as is, then, you know, having to perform in front of a really, really large group of strangers and just being super nervous about it can stop them from wanting to do it at all. Another reason that sometimes people don't want to go to outside tournaments is maybe they've heard stories of parents getting into arguments with other parents, complaining about unfair judging, and just griping. You know, and again, a lot of the larger tournaments have figured out how to nip that in the bud, but you can't always control all the parents and control what your parents are seeing and hearing at outside events. So sometimes, you know, they may have been dissuaded by things they've heard from other parents who have gone to tournaments that didn't run as smoothly as possible in the past. Another common reason is, you know, kids or adults might feel bad if they don't place and base their self-esteem on, you know, their martial arts talent on that one tournament and how they've placed at it. So you really don't want your, you know, kids doing that or your adults doing that, and that's a matter of educating them, and the ones that are super, super delicate, kind of protecting them until they look at it a different way or feel a little bit differently about it. But there are some things you can do with your in-house tournament to help even those types of students. So now that I've kind of covered five main reasons, I'm sure you can think of a few others, but five main reasons why students might be resistant to attending outside tournaments and why those bad experiences I just mentioned or those reasons might not be good for your student retention, let's turn that around and talk about how to fix that and create an event that will boost your student retention and give them a positive experience. First of all, your in-school tournament's going to be affordable, you know, opposed to having to travel or drive or pay entry fees that are too high. You're going to price your school tournament about like a regular special event, depending on your expenses, but it's going to be more affordable. So that's going to make it more appealing to more parents and more students. Another thing you want to do is you're going to create a schedule, and you are going to run an on-time, or pretty much on-time, event, because control is in your hands and in your feet, too, right? You have total control over the schedule of that event and how it's going to run. You're not at somebody else's mercy, so you're going to create a schedule and run an on-time event, which will take away the objection of parents who don't want to wait around a long time or spend their entire day at a competition. Another thing you're going to want to do is create a safe, competitive environment. And you can do that by requiring everyone to practice in class so they feel competent, and make it clear to everyone that even though it's a competition, that everybody's going to clap, they're going to cheer, and they're going to support everyone equally. And that's a key component to retention. You know, think about it, you know, if just the best competitors are clapped for, you know, or hear their name being chanted, you know, kids notice that and adults notice that, you know, and that can weigh in on their self-esteem. So if you make sure that you're instructing everybody that this is the way it is, we are all going to support everybody. We're going to clap, we're going to cheer, we're going to scream when appropriate, you know, and support everybody evenly, 100%, then that can take some of the fear out of joining a competition in the first place, and it's good for your retention. Another thing you can do is communicate effectively in advance with your parents and your spectators that, number one, this is a positive experience. Spectators are required to behave with courtesy and respect and as role models for the students. You need to brief them as well on what the judging criteria is without getting into too much detail. But you may even want to directly say, even though you may not agree with how all the judges render their decisions, by being here and by being one of our spectators and our supporters, you're agreeing to be supportive and positive 100%. We can't tolerate anything else. Our judges are very qualified, and I wouldn't allow them to be here if I didn't trust them 100%, and so should you. So before we start, everybody must agree to that. You'd be amazed at what pre-framing the audience and the spectators can do for you. So now, you know, if somebody's nasty or negative, they are completely going against what you just instructed them that they, you know, were to do and that they agreed upon. So you'll have to gear them up if they misbehave. Just kidding. And then last but not least, you know, before the competition, in class, make sure there's practice time. Make sure there's practice time and, you know, so they can practice introducing themselves if that's something that's part of your tournament. They practice going up in front of pretend judges, which can be part of the class, and actually performing, getting pretend scores. You can give everybody a 10 if you want so everybody feels good about it. But that way they've already kind of walked through what it feels like to get out on the floor and compete if they've never done so before. And that can help them really be put at ease, and it can help them visualize themselves actually taking part in the competition actually taking place. So that's a good thing to do. And, you know, instruct everybody, you know what, you're winners just for trying. Some people don't have the courage to get out and do it, but you do. You know, it doesn't matter if you win first place or eighth place. What matters is that you try your best. And if you say that, everything around inside your in-house tournament has to endorse and reinforce that information. So, you know, again, we just took a look at some of the different retention issues and reasons why people would not want to compete. And we just counteracted all five of those with ways and strategies that you can build into your tournament to just get rid of all those objections, so, and make it a very good retention-based event. So now that we've covered some of the retention features of your in-house tournament that you'll want to employ, let's talk about profit. Yay. Okay, it's got to be worth your while to do this because it is going to take some work. It is going to be fun. But it's going to take some planning on your part. So first of all, let's think about our profit. What kind of profit can we come up with? Well, first of all, here's a couple different scenarios for you. you know, you're going to want to profit between $20 and $30 a person. If you charge just $40, and I'm going to say that's advanced registration because you're going to want to put in advanced registration for a couple of reasons we'll talk about later, but let's just say hypothetically it was $40 in advance for two events. And you have 50 people compete. Well, that's a gross of $2,000 in registration fees. If you were to spend $20 a person on trophies or plaques, because they're going to cost you, you know, you can get small ones that cost you right around $8 to $10 each, so two divisions. That's where I came up with the $20 a person. Then you're going to net about $1,000, okay, because you gross $2,000, you're going to spend about $1,000, so you're going to net about $1,000 in the entry fees. If you decide to go with medals that you hang around your neck, you're going to pay about $5 a medal, maybe less. You can probably get some for less than that. I kind of, when in doubt, all round up high. But about $10 a person. So if you do the math on that, your $2,000 less about $500 is going to give you about a $1,500 profit. So medals are even more profitable than the trophies or plaques. And then if you go really inexpensive with your rewards, with rosette ribbons that run you about $2.50 a piece times two division is $5. Then you take that $2,000 and I think I did some fuzzy math. Let me back up. I did fuzzy math. I apologize. With this particular one, you'll net about $1,750, okay, $1,750. I redeemed myself. I thought I gave you the wrong number on medals, but I didn't. It was $1,500, and rosette ribbons, you'd end up with about $1,750 out of that $2,000. Now, if you are going to charge $40 for advanced registration for two events, the rosette ribbons are okay, but, you know, if you don't want to go trophies and plaques and spend half of what you're bringing in, medals are a pretty nice way to, pretty nice awards to give out to people. I've done all of the above, and some of my adults and my kids just, they love the medals, and I think it was because they could wear them around their neck. One of my adult school teachers, who was very unathletic when she started, she, you know, pulled off a win in, I think, fighting, and she said, you know what, Kathy, I've got to tell you, I wore my medal to dinner with my friends. I just couldn't help myself. I tucked it in my shirt. But I had to pull it out, and I had to tell them about the tournament, and I had to tell them about the school and how long our family's been training and all of those things. So, you know, there is, you know, that. You know, medals, trophies and plaques are great. Most people won't carry them around with them. They'll have to be in the person's house or their business, wherever they're hosting that tournament or plaque, to be able to show it to their friends and talk about it, which can help you build new members in your school. But those medals, you know, I was really surprised. And of course, I was tickled and pleased that she actually wore that out and was telling people about it, even though she tucked it in her shirt to be more discreet. I thought that was just way cool. So you may want to keep that in mind. So when you look at your profit, you could also offer some of each. So you could also give trophies for the first three positions, give medals for fourth, fifth, and sixth, and give ribbons for, you know, all the way out to maybe 12 places or however many people are in your division. You know, you'd like to make it so everybody wins something, and that's what these numbers are based upon. Now, this does not include concessions that you may set up because you may be able to make some money selling, you know, hot dogs or drinks and chips and stuff like that, you know, or healthier things too. Spectator fees. Spectator fees, you know, you could go as high as $5 a person. If you want to make it more affordable and have less people squealing if this is your first time doing this, you know, if you go $2 a person or $5 for the whole family, that's really affordable, and I doubt anyone's going to squeal at you for playing or squeak a little about it. So $2 a person, $5 for a whole family, as high as $5 depending on your entry fee. If your entry fee is $50, you know, $5 a person is pretty standard. That's 10% of the entry cost. So that's going to help you raise at least an additional $100 or $200, probably more than that, in spectator fees. I didn't add up concessions because it totally depends on what you sell there. In addition, here's the thing a lot of people forget to do. If you have spectators in the tournament that are family members that are not members of the school, or, you know, some of the kids have invited school teachers, or, you know, the adults invited their friends, anybody in the school or at the tournament that is not a member is a potential new student, right? So you'll want to have a way when they come in to have them fill something out to win a membership, and you'll also want to draw for each division, you'll want to draw a winner of those people that came in to watch who is there right now during the awards ceremony. And I'm skipping ahead a little bit, but just think of this. If I'm a guest at a tournament and I've entered to win, let's just say I've entered to win a free one-month membership, and while they're giving out awards for everybody else, I turn to the audience, or somebody turns to the audience, and they pull my name out and say, hey, Kathy, you're the winner. You've won a 1 month of martial arts. Go right over there to Mary at the desk, and she'll get you set up for your first lesson. Here you go. Everybody give them a round of applause. That can help you get a new enrollment right there on the spot. In addition, at that point, you can also announce, you know, you can thank everyone who's guests and spectators who have come to the tournament to support their people and everybody for the day, and you can offer them a one-day-only enrollment special, and I recommend doing something that's just really inexpensive, like a week for $20. If you want to throw in a uniform, go ahead. If you don't, that's fine, too. But $20 is a reach in your pocket for $20, or it's a grab your credit card and just give it to you on the spot. Let them do an introductory for $20. It's only good for that one day, and have them go right over to Mary, too, and sign up, like, right now. You've already got their name, address, phone number, and email when they came in the door, so you can continue to market to them. Either way, if they don't join, you have that information. So you're doing all of these things, and you're coordinating all of these things to make your in-house tournament more profitable. I mean, imagine if you got two new students from the event, it's going to pay you $1,200 a year. That's another $2,400 you can put gross in your pocket. So an in-house tournament can be very profitable in a lot of ways, and it can be really good for student retention in a lot of ways as well. So what I want to do now is I want to jump over to the Planning Your In-House Tournament document that you may have already downloaded from the e-news that went out on March 11th, or if you're listening to this live, it's actually on the web. It's actually on the web page, on the webcast page, as the very last download that's available. So you can go ahead and grab that. And let's go ahead and talk about planning your in-house tournament, because that is really the key. I mean, this is something you don't wing if you want to go well and you want to make for retention and profit. Basically, the first thing you really want to do is just start with a huge event plan. Go through all the different tasks and things that you're going to need to do prior to the event and give yourself deadlines to work with. I've given you an example in this document of some of the different items that might be on your list. Of course, you can add to it, but I've given you 10 things to think about. The first one is, you know, you want to choose the event date and the start time, obviously, right at the beginning. And when you do that, one of the things you want to keep in mind is you've got to make sure it doesn't interfere with any major holidays, any other local tournament events, or just local events that are big in general, because that can, you know, encourage people to not come to your event if they're already committed to go someplace else. So you want to make sure that your date for your event doesn't interfere with anything else that's going on. You want to choose a start time that's not too early in the morning and not too late in the day. When I've done in-house tournaments in the past, I always started at 10 a.m., and I love that time, and I put my youngest kids first, because it gave me plenty of time to get my fanny in the door and get really organized, get my help armed and ready, just, you know, last-minute details. If I let a couple last-minute people register late, I've got to figure out what divisions they're going into and redo my list and all those things. So I want to make sure that I give myself a couple extra minutes in the morning. Plus, you know, some people don't wake up real early and they're not morning people, so 10 o'clock can be pushing it for some people and parents. So, you know, again, select a date. When you select the date, leave yourself at least 4 weeks for event promotion, because you figure you've got to promote the event, you've got to get everything done on your to-do list that we're talking about now, and you've got to get your awards ordered and in. You've got to get all of your pre-event items taken care of. I mean, ideally, if you can get your awards in a week or two before the tournament, I tell you, showing every class what they have, what they can win while you're talking about it, will get them drooling. That's exactly what you want. You want them to register early, and you want them to know what they have in store for them for awards. Okay? So event date is important, and start time. Another task that would be on your pre-planning list is to decide on the number of divisions you need and to audit your member statistics to help. Now, when you do and your divisions, I highly recommend you don't put any more than 8 to 12 people in one division. And the reason is the in-house tournament is going to be good for retention, right? So we want to make sure that everybody wins something and comes away feeling good about the fact that they just tried. So, you know, this is what I recommend. You don't have to do it this way, but, you know, this is how you, you know, create a feel-good tournament and build a lot of fellowship is by having those small divisions. And I picked 8 to 12. I mean, ideally, you know, if you're doing sparring, 8's a great number when you have to draw for who fights who, and 12 is a really good number, too. So, you know, it doesn't always work out that way, but, you know, 8 to 12 people, that way you can give out 12 places max or 8 places max and have that ironed out. But before you decide on your exact competitive divisions, you know, obviously you have to decide what divisions you're going to offer. If you've never done an in-house tournament before, you might feel more comfortable just offering like 2 competitive divisions, like forms and sparring. You know, if you're, you know, your school is used to competing in tournaments all the time, then you might go into breaking and musical forms and team competition and just get crazy with it. But, you know, if it's your first time, keep it simple. Just offer a couple of divisions. And before you finalize your divisions, look at your potential statistics of who might compete. By that, I mean take a look at what students you have at each belt rank, what their ages are, and if you're planning on dividing your adult population into male-female divisions, then look at how many girls, how many guys you have as well. When you have that all put together, then it's easy to look and go, okay, I've got 25 little ninjas, and, you know, half of them are beginner ranks, half of them are more advanced ranks, so boom, there we go. I'm going to cut that in half, and half in one division, half in another division. Or I'm going to make 3 divisions of 8-8 and, you know, 1 of 9 is the way that that's going to roll. So you need to really look at that first. Now, if that's your total number, you can expect, you know, really, if you really kick butt promoting, you might have 50% of your population competing. So keep that in mind. 33 is pretty standard, but if you do a really, really awesome job, you might get about half of your people competing. So you can keep that in mind. If you're using martial arts software, or if you're using the member solutions management software, you can definitely, with our software, I know, you can run a report of all of your members and sort it by ages and their belt ranks if you've put all that information into your system. Makes it really easy. Just run a report and then take a look at that and then start figuring out, you know, what divisions you will need to offer to accommodate your students. And, you know, no matter what you decide on how many people are going to be in each division, if you can almost as they register, if you can almost start like writing their names down for the dates and the times they're supposed to come in, that will help you with some of your future items on the list. The next thing you're going to want to do, obviously, is order awards for the tournament because you've got to get them in time, and ideally you have them in time, again, to blatantly show them off. So once you have an idea of how many divisions you're going to have and the number of places you'll need for each, investigate prices, you know, order your medals or your ribbons or your trophies or your plaques for your event. If this is your first tournament, you might have a hard time really estimating how many people are going to compete. In that case, when you order awards, don't put dates on them. So if you're getting something that has your logo on it, which is awesome, and has first place, don't put dates on them. If you want to put dates on them, you can always do it later, you know, have them engraved, grab somebody local to do it. But by not having dates on it, if I over-order and, you know, I ordered 50 too many awards, I can just use them next time if the date is not on them. Or I can use them, you know, as giveaways in class for little contests that we run and things like that. So when in doubt, don't put the date on them. And again, you know, I mentioned before, when properly promoted, 33 to 50% of your student population should participate. If you've got more than that, you rock. So, you know, when you order awards, get enough to cover at least 50% of your students if you're going to do a really great job promoting the event. If you have the wonderful challenge that, oops, too many people registered, you didn't order enough awards, the way you can quickly correct that is by giving out the last two or three places instead of giving them whatever else you've ordered, is create certificates that you can go quickly to the printers and get made for the last couple of places. It's not as good as giving a medal, of course, or a trophy, but you know what? They still got something. They still got an award of recognition for their participation in the event, and that's a way that you can solve that if you have that last-minute challenge that might come up. It's a good problem to have. Of course, you know, if you always want to go back and get them something else, that's fine, but you got to have something to give them the day of the tournament. So keep that in mind. Okay, another thing that will be on your pre-planning list will be to decide how much to charge. What are your entry fees going to be? You're going to want to base those on a number of estimated participants you think you're going to have in the tournament, and look into your estimation on the number of awards you'll need, or basically your expense. So you're going to determine your entry fees by looking at about how many people you think you're going to compete and how much you're going to have to spend out of pocket. Your biggest expense is always going to be your awards. So kind of look at that. If you normally charge between $40 and $50 for a special event that's held at your school, you're going to probably want to try to keep that consistent as well. You're going to want to keep it around the same price. So look at all three of those things, your expenses, how many, you know, people you think you have coming in to offset those expenses, and what you normally charge when you figure out how much you're going to charge for your tournament. In addition, consider offering a discount for competitors who register early, because you really want that. I mean, the more people you know are coming to the tournament, and the sooner you know it, the easier it's going to be on you when you have to order those awards, and you don't want to over-order, ideally. So encourage advance registrations by discounting it by like $10 by a certain date. So if you really want $40, charge them $40 in advance and put the cutoff week and a half, 2 weeks, whatever you need in advance, and raise the price to $50, you know, after that date, and stick to that to encourage people to register on time and early. Another thing, a lot of people don't do this, but you want to really create an event schedule. Instead of just saying the tournament starts at 10 and it goes till whenever, you're going to actually want to create a schedule with a timeline of when you're estimating, and I say estimating, I should say when it is, when each division is starting and when each division will finish. And when you create that schedule, you're going to think about, okay, what are my number of potential participants? Okay, if I think I'm going to have 20 preschoolers compete, maybe I'm going to put 10 in each division. I'm going to think about how long it's going to take me to run those divisions from start to finish, including awards presentation, and put that time on the tournament schedule or the flyer that's going to go out. So, you know, you think about it. What's it going to take? They've got to walk in with their parents. They've got, even if they pre-registered, they still have to check in so you know they're there. They might need a little warm-up. You might have to have a leadership team member kind of walk them through their form or whatever they're doing a couple times. They have to compete. You know, they have to win their awards, and you have to do your drawing for their guests and things like that. So how long is that going to take you to go all the way through? When in doubt, figure it's going to take you a little bit longer than you think, because that's usually what happens. So add a little extra time in there if need be. So, of course, if a division has more participants than another, you're going to need more time budgeted because it's going to take longer to check them in, warm them up, have them compete, and give awards. An example of a tournament schedule might be, I put 9 in this document, but 9 to 10 a.m. might be Little Ninjas white belt through green belt, ring 1. And the same time, 9 to 10 might be Little Dragons blue belt and above in ring 2. That's if I have the capacity in my school to run 2 divisions at one time. Following them, I might have down from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. My junior kids are coming in ages 6 to 10, white through green belt. They're in ring 1. Junior kids ages 6 to 10, blue belt through brown belt. They're in ring 2. Another reason to create a more concise event schedule than just, hey, the tournament starts at 10 and goes till whenever, is if you have a small facility and you don't have room for all competitors competing to be in the building at the same time with all of their parents, with all of their spectators, that you can't fit them all in at the same time anyway, and it's going to prove for a crowded mess. So if you can create a schedule where you get people in, they compete, you can make your awards presentations and shake hands and meet people and direct people over to enroll on a more personal basis, get them out, get the next group in, that's going to make your job a lot easier. You're going to have better retention, better sales out of it. And in addition, your parents will really appreciate, again, the superior time management at your event. But, you know, if you've got a small facility, you pretty much need to function this way anyway. So, end of story there. Another thing you can do to make your life easier in your planning stage is offer online registration. You know, once you've got your event date, you've got your schedule, you have your divisions decided, your entry fees are all figured out, you can customize an online registration form and take sign-ups right away. And, you know, one of the benefits is if your students can register online, 24/7 is at their convenience, so you don't have to be at the front desk, but it also saves you the task of trying to figure out what the registration forms are, who's filled them out, who's paid, who hasn't. I don't know about you, but I'm not seeing this happen to me before, but, you know, it's very easy if you have more than just yourself handling registrations at the front desk that people sometimes might forget to check off who's paid and who hasn't paid. And the tournament registration form with the hold harmless agreement signed and all that good stuff can get lost from time to time when it's in hard copy on the desk, you know, and nothing's worse than having to go to somebody, you've already taken care of your registration, haven't you? You know, because you don't want to say, I'm not really sure. So online registration can help you keep track of all that stuff and enable your people more flexibility in when they sign up. You know, and save your front desk person from the need to handle registrations, take money, and track the competitors. If you don't already have that feature that's built into your website where you can, like, just go set that up, if you want to check out our software for that, we actually have an tournament registration form template that's already done that anybody can customize, and you can get, like, a free 30-day trial of Event Manager online registration software from us by clicking the click-through link in the report that I was mentioning. If you're not sure about it, just email consulting@membersolutions.com and we'll get that for you. There's also a sample of an online tournament registration form if you just want to look at it to see, like, how it's set up. Or if you're going to make your own, you just want to see, like, some of the things you might put on yours, you can use that the template we've given you as well to check it out. So if you can offer online registrations, it's just going to make your life easier. Plus, you'll have everything prepaid, and if you want to email everybody 2 days before, if you're using our software, you'll be able just to click it and just send them an email and remind them what time to show up, what to bring, that they should invite all their friends and family, what the, you know, what the spectator fees are, et cetera. Whatever you need to tell them about, you can do that easily with one quick email. So that's a neat thing to be able to do. Another thing is you're going to want to design a basic event flyer to promote your event. And, you know, even though you're going to make class announcements, you're going to put it on your website, you're going to have them practice in school, you're going to put it in your school newsletter, you know, you're going to have all these other things, it's still not a bad idea just to have a really basic event flyer. You don't have to spend a lot of money producing one or anything. The report I'm referencing also has a free download of a Microsoft Word flyer, so it's really easy for you to modify and do whatever you want to it. If you're listening live online, I put a banner and a link on that so you can just grab it for yourself and save it to your desktop right now. And it's also in the how-to article, how to plan your in-house tournament. There's a link for that so you can get that free flyer and customize it to your heart's content. When you customize the information on your flyer, keep it simple, but make sure you've got your online registration link listed if you're doing online registrations. List your advanced registration discount, like, oh, you'll save $10 when you register for our tournament by April 30th. You know, so make sure you include the expiration date. And then show them what the full price is going to be if they miss advanced registration. For shame. If you're charging spectator registration fees, or I should just say spectator fees, you can also state this on your flyer. You know, again, I wouldn't go more than $5 per person. But if you want to be, you know, really good about it, if it's your first one, you're not sure how they're going to react, just $2 a person, $5 a family, piece of cake. You'll want your students to enroll early, again, so you have a good idea of how many people are going to compete when you order those awards. You're going to want to promote your tournament online on your website and in other places too. So be sure to add a paragraph about your in-house tournament on the home page of your website. And also in any if you have a student area on your website, make sure it's blatantly displayed on the first page where your students go to their student area. Again, you know, at the end of the paragraph, always include a call to action like register now to save $10. And then that link, that register now to save $10, if you're doing online registration, you just hyperlink that to your registration page. If you're not doing online registration, just tell them how to do it. You know, register now to save $10. And it might be print off the online registration form and bring it to our front desk if that's how you're taking registrations. But tell them exactly what they need to do to complete the registration since you're telling them to do it now and save $10 or whatever your offer is. That's just one example. Okay? So put that on your planning list as well, that you need to promote your tournament online. Now, a couple other ways to promote your tournament online, don't forget about your social networking sites. So if you have a social networking site for your business, which it might be a MySpace, it might be a Facebook, it might be one of the other ones that you've had your students all opt into or all join as friends of the school, you know, don't forget to promote it to them that way. So even if they're kind of ignoring what's going on in the school, some of them might be Facebook and MySpace junkies, and encourage them in that posting of your event to invite their family and friends to come as spectators to the event and let them know that you'll be doing a drawing to give out a free membership to one of their friends and family members that doesn't currently train, and that there'll be one day only enrollment specials. So again, you're still marketing the school while you're hosting an event for retention and profit for your students. So that's one of the things to go on your list, promote your tournament online. Another thing that should be on your list is make a list of your volunteers that are needed. Well, you don't want to forget anything, right? So when you have a good idea of the number of divisions you're going to offer and other event logistics, think through everything that's going to happen that day. And I'm just going to share with you some of the things that I think about when I think about planning an in-house tournament. Even people who are pre-registered, they still have to check in, right? Because we have to know that they showed up. So you're going to need somebody to check people in and need at least one volunteer, if not two, to man that. You might want to assign a few people or some of your kids that are on leadership team to greet people as they walk in and direct them where they need to go first. So you might have a couple people at the door that, you know, welcome them. Hey, welcome to the USA Karate Interschool Tournament Challenge of Champions today. You'll need to walk over and check in at the table to your left. That's all they need to say. But you can train them to do that, and it makes it nice. So you might need greeters on your list of volunteers. Another thing that you might consider when you're making your list of who you need help, think about your divisions. Who do you need to run your divisions? Judges, scorekeepers, timekeepers. You might even want runners, which would be people that take the results to the awards table. How many do you require of each? Plan all this ahead of time. You'll probably also benefit from somebody at your awards table that's designated to double-check scores for any divisions that have numerical ratings. So, for example, if you're having a kata competition and the judges have sort of, or the scorekeepers have already added up and kind of marked off who's first, second, and third, don't be shy about having somebody double-check the numbers. It's not unheard of, even with a calculator, to make a mistake. So before you give out awards, you might want to designate somebody at that awards table to double-check scores for the divisions and sign off and write down a 1, 2, 3, or in all the places of who's earning what position before that goes back with the awards to be given out. Another position might be to think about all the volunteers that you're asking for. Some of them may not have all day to dedicate, you know, if you have a big event. So you may want to have a half-day shift. Maybe you want to plan on half your people staying for the first half and then people coming in at lunchtime to finish off. So if that's the case, you need to double all of your volunteers. And just think about, who else do you need to help? You know, do you need concession help? You need retail helpers? You need somebody to man the enrollment table that you're going to have? You know, who do you need? Once you have a list of all the jobs available for volunteers, go as far as start writing names down of people who you think might be able to fill the positions or that you would like to see fill the positions first. Personally invite them and ask them to let you know for sure by a certain date. When you know what volunteer openings are unfilled, then you can kind of make an open cattle call. It's a lot easier to get parents involved than just like checking in somebody for a tournament, saying, yep, they're already paid, there it is. Check them off the list here, now you need to go over here, than it is to have them do timekeeping and scorekeeping, which takes a little bit of training. So no matter what, make a nice big list of all the people, all the help you need, and when in doubt, ask for more help than you think you need, because chances are you will. Another thing, and this is really key, a lot of people don't do this, and this has made the events I've done in the past really successful and really smooth, is don't be shy about having a pre-event meeting or walkthrough. And rather than doing it the morning of the tournament, think about doing it the night before. So basically, what I used to do is I used to get all of my help to show up to a special meeting, and I used to actually run a mini quickie tournament. So what I'd do is I'd have everybody come in, I'd have everybody take their positions of their jobs, and I'd get a couple of kids or adults to be pretend competitors, and I'd have them walk in and go through the entire process. They walk in, somebody greets them and shows them where the check-in table is. You know, or if they're guests, they fill, here's this, I need you, please fill this out over at the check-in table and put it in the entry box to win a free membership. By the way, we'll be having one day only enrollment specials, so don't miss out on that. Then from the check-in table, what happens there? Where do they get directed from the check-in table? Okay, you can put all your things down in the changing room, and you'll want to warm up over here, or you'll want to go, you're in division one, you'll want to go to ring one, or whatever it is. Okay, and then actually take them through, bowing in and doing a competition. Now the judges, this is what we do. This is the scorekeepers, the timekeepers' job. What it also allows you to do, in addition to just making sure that people feel comfortable and they're kind of understanding what they're going to do, it gives you the ability to coach them before the event starts. Nothing's worse than having to stop what you're doing as the coordinator of this tournament and run 5 million places and go, you guys have to be in range when you do judging. You can't be like 5 million, you know, this is about where we're scoring as a base. This is average. Okay. Scorekey, oh, you guys didn't know you were supposed to tag somebody with this red little thing on their belt when they did sparring, so we know white is on our right and red was on our left. Oops. So you want to get all those things taken care of the night before. So you can do on-the-job coaching when you do your walkthrough, and it will make your event so much smoother the next day. It'll be awesome. I'm going to open up the floor for questions and answers in just a second. I can't believe I've talked this long, because I usually talk really fast and really don't talk that long in my presentations. But the last thing I want to direct you to is more information, as if we haven't given you enough already, on how to run a successful in-house tournament. If you get the MA Success magazine, I write a monthly column called Marshall Smarts, and it's about how to and how not to do things in your business. And the March issue that's been out about a month, the March 2009 MA Success magazine, on page 52 is my column called How to Run an In-House Tournament. So you can get some additional tips there as well. So as we're wrapping up going to questions, you know, again, you've got the how-to plan article from today's e-news. You've got the flyer to download if you want to customize it for your own events. You've got the sample of the online registration form and a link to get a free event manager trial, which won't cost you anything, for 30 days. And then if you want to cancel it, you're welcome to do that before the 30 days is up. So you at least test it, try it out, but it's pretty awesome. And, you know, in addition to that, we've got Q&A time. So with that in mind, let me open up our phone lines and see if anybody on the phone has a question. So I'm going to unmute everybody first. Okay, is there anybody on the phone line, first of all, that has a question that I can answer for you? Going once, going twice. Okay, well, let's move to web questions. I do have a web question from Larry, and I think I've partially answered it, but not all the way. Larry wants to know, he said he's running an in-house tournament this weekend. Well, this is in the nick of time, Larry. And he wants to know thoughts on spectator fees. He's advertised a $5 fee for adults and a $3 fee for kids. What's the best way to enforce this and not make the parents angry? Okay, well, Larry, I say that you've already announced it. You know, you've already said it's $5 for adults and $3 for kids. So basically, you have to enforce it, and that's just the thing is. When they come in the door, it's $5 for adults and $3 for kids. You've already told them about this. So they really shouldn't be angry if they've read your tournament material. But we all know that there's always somebody, and there's always a couple of them. So, I mean, really what you can do is if you have the documents that show that you pre-advertise that without saying, hey, you know, and making them feel dumb, I would just go, oh, I'm sorry you didn't know that. And I would turn the flyer around. I'm sorry, it did say that on the entry form that it's $5 for adults and $3 for kids. I apologize that you didn't know about that. And then, Larry, if you have concessions going on where you're selling water or snacks or whatever, what you might do real quick is make up a couple of little free $1 coupons or $2 coupons for the concession stands. And if you do have people that squeal about that, you might say, you know what, I'm so sorry you didn't know about that. You can see it's advertised. But let me do this for you. I have to charge it because everybody else is paying, and that's what we're doing. But what I can do for you is I can give you these $3 or this $5 coupon for the concession stand so you guys can have some food on us, okay? I'm sorry you didn't know about that. And that's one way to kind of de-escalate that a little bit. So you can keep that in mind. So I hope that helps answer your question. And does anybody else have any questions about how to run an in-house tournament? Okay. Well, if you do think of questions later, because that's typically what happens when you get a lot of information, feel free to email consulting@membersolutions.com. And if you want to direct it to me, you can just put in there, hey, Kathy, and that's Kathy, K-A-T-H-Y, and I'd be happy to answer that question for you. Or if you are planning a tournament and you run into some extra questions, you got a bunch of them, then why not set up a free one-on-one 20-minute consultation with myself? Same thing, just email consulting@membersolutions.com, and we'd be happy to help you with that. Thank you so very much for listening to today's teleseminar sponsored by Member Solutions Consulting, helping you build your business one member at a time. Everybody take care. Bye-bye.